What is up, freaks? It's your boy Marty here to introduce this week's sponsors. First one is Cash App. You freaks all already know all about them. They're number one finance app in the App Store for the last 2 years. Sitting on top of the throne like a don. Cash App is helping us stack sats on the weekends. It's the first, or stack sats any day you want, really, not just on the weekends. It's the first P2P payments app that has allowed their users to buy Bitcoin. As you freaks know, on top of this, they have their Boost program that comes with a card that helps you save money when you go to partner merchants. They're partnered with Chick-fil-A, Whole Foods, coffee shops, Taco Bell. The list goes on. You swipe your Boost card at these merchants, and you get automatic cash back. And then you can convert those cash straight into sats immediately after that. Low time preference. Take those savings, turn them into sats. Go to the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the Cash App today. Second sponsor is one of those boot camps trying to help create more Bitcoin developers out there. 21 Lectures. This episode is supported by 21 Lectures. 21 Lectures' mission is to bring more developers to the Bitcoin ecosystem with in-person courses. So you'll be lectured by world-renowned Bitcoin and Lightning developers. Their courses teach participants the fundamentals of how to work with the Bitcoin blockchain. They cover cryptography, the structure of transactions, how blocks are created, and how they are chained together. Smart contract languages, as well as the Lightning protocol, all the cool stuff, including toolkits to develop on top of the Bitcoin blockchain and Lightning. To learn more, visit 21lectures.com. That's 21, the number's 21lectures.com. I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Jack Mahlers. I know I sure did. And if you do enjoy it and you want to support us, please smash that subscribe button and rate and review if you have the time and you feel so compelled. Also, you can go to tftc.io/contribute if you ever want to buy a shout out or throw some sats to TFTC's way. Enjoy. What is up, freaks? It's your boy Marty Bent coming to you from a beautiful rooftop in Williamsburg. It's a great sunny Saturday afternoon here, sitting down with Jack Mahlers. Jack, welcome back to the podcast.
Yo, hey, thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for coming back. We're making like a bunch of basic white bitches and drinking rosé on the roof. Got some LaCroix on ice as well. Very excited for this conversation. Repeat guest, so there's no need to go through your tale. What the hell's been going on, man?
A lot and nothing. Both. Life.
Seems like a lot's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot's always going on.
Well, thank you for building the Zap app.
You're welcome.
And making it available on iPhones. I've been using it for the last week every day. And I've read about it. You saw it. Again, man, props to you guys. Incredible fucking UX. It's basically just scanned a QR code, had access to my node, was able... I was busy. Like, I had to go do stuff for, like, the merch, like, pick up stuff. I couldn't, like, be at my computer. So being able to, on the go, open up channels, like, request liquidity from people, like, while I was on the subway was freaking crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to take that compliment, thank you, and then pass it on to the community, dude. Seriously. I mean, Zap crossed 1,000 Slack members recently, and it really is community-driven. If I show you my first sketch of the iPhone app and then what you use... not the same. And that's thanks to the community. It's a really cool project and cool to see everyone kind of unite and do it together. Really cool. But I'm being honest there.
Who's your UX head? I want to shake his hand.
Yeah. So the way it works is I have a sketchbook. It's actually in my backpack right here. And I probably sketch a kajillion things on paper. And I share it publicly on the Zap Slack and on GitHub. And then there's a dude in Germany that I work with. His name's Ole. And we turn those into actual design screens and things that can be coded. And it goes through a super iterative public process of like peer review, but in design. And then someone ends up building it. And then we use it. And we're like, whoa, yo, that sucks. And then we change it. And it sucks again. And eventually it doesn't suck so bad.
So it sounds like I have to shake your hand here. We reached across the table.
No, it's crazy. You guys have simplified it. It's three buttons. You got your wallet, your history, and then your settings, which mm-hmm. allow you to manage your nodes and your wallets and whatever denomination you want to denominate your currency in.
Yeah.
Are you guys thinking simplicity first, always?
Absolutely, yeah. I think Zap's principles and its mission has been pretty clear and hasn't changed and never will, really. Like, I think Zap stands for ushering in a new era of Bitcoin where Lightning enables a lot of new things and the relationship with the end user is going to mature a lot, and we want to test its boundaries and be a part of that. So absolutely, simplicity first, and almost exaggerated, and seeing where the limits hit and where we get pushed back.
Yeah, no, and it's so it seems like Zap's like a great base to do what you just alluded to, which was leverage Lightning to create cool use cases. It seems like you've been building some cool stuff.
Yeah.
Like beyond Zap, what is interesting you? What are you working on? And
well, so I guess from a bird's eye view, if I sat back with my family, we were like, yo, we should help Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin's been amazing to us, probably the best thing that's happened to our family. And how can we help? And one way was improving the relationship with the end consumer, increasing the velocity of the asset, efficient settlement, and doing this Zap thing. And then the other was the exchange and market space. Like, my grandfather was the chairman of the Chicago Board of Trade. My dad has a really cool history in finance and in markets. And we see the exchange space and, like, the marketplace within Bitcoin is a little bit embarrassing, which isn't a bad thing, but...
Yeah, we touched on this the first time you
yeah.
were in. So, like, catching up with you, when was that? Was that in October?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been, what, 6 months almost? 7 months?
Yeah.
7 months, shit.
Even longer, yeah.
It seems like a lot has been happening.
Yeah.
Since now and then. What, so you... That's, like, what are you building infrastructurally?
Sure. Well, so... I'm speaking here at the Magical Crypto Carnival, whatever that is, about the unsolved problem of Bitcoin derivatives. So I think to me that was the lowest hanging fruit was the derivatives market. As in other asset classes, the derivatives market either mirrors the spot or carries higher volume and higher value than the spot. And in Bitcoin, that's not the case, as we have like a ton of spot exchanges with terrible order execution, and no one's really tackled derivatives and professional risk transfer. And so to me, that was like, I remember, like, I FaceTime my parents like every day, and I remember telling them like, yeah, like Zap is cool, but like, I think I'm gonna try and solve Bitcoin's derivative problem. And they're Brooke's like, oh, like, sweetie, that's adorable. And like, it turns out it's really hard, and I found out a lot of cool shit, but
it's hard,
but yeah.
You think that'd be a pretty easy problem to solve?
I thought so, but that's because I'm dumb.
So am I. What are the hardest problems? Like, what are the hurdles that you've run into?
Yeah, well, the derivatives market more or less doesn't really exist. So right now, if we look at derivatives in Bitcoin, you have your traditional spot future, like the CME future, OKX, these, and then you have this thing that is the perpetual swap, which is BitMEX, right? When you look at why the perpetual swap is successful, is that it is a Bitcoin spot product, right? So you're allowed to speculate on Bitcoin and trade Bitcoin without a bank account. And that's what it accomplishes through ways of like just the specification of the product, like through its funding rates and its rollover time of 8 hours. It's actually intended to be treated and traded like a spot product. It's not supposed to be traded like a derivative, but its arbitrage and success comes from basically arbing this friction with banks. And you basically get to speculate and trade with leverage, but you don't need a bank account. And that is where the success derives from. But if you look traditionally at derivatives and their intention, at least in Chicago, is for risk transfer. It's the corn farmer, right? The corn mm-hmm. farmer is inherently long. And the corn farmer doesn't want to be so exposed to an asset. The corn farmer actually is good at farming. And it's not good at he's not good at trading, right? So there's this derivatives market to transfer that risk and to allow a market maker to take that risk on and dissolve of it elsewhere and charge a premium. And who is our corn farmer in Bitcoin? Where is the risk transfer, the liquidity, the flow within our asset class? Because what BitMEX has done has been wildly successful, and it's great, but it's just garnered like a bunch of retail speculative flow through essentially arbing and routing around, charging premium for the banking troubles that are in the asset class, but we don't have this risk transfer like aspect. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
Trying to tackle that problem and like really understand what's the landscape look like in Bitcoin? Who's our corn farmer? Where's the flow? Who mints the asset? Who holds the asset? Where's that asset? How's that asset reach market? And who's taking on risk? Like, you know, who's not hodling? Who has actual real economics that are baked into BTC, and which will help us, it will help the market be more efficient. It'll help us accurately price this thing. Like, we don't have a credit market. We don't have forward pricing, but someone is creating this thing. Someone's economics are based on the asset, and we need to learn more about that, transfer their risk, de-risk them a little bit. And so that derivative market, if I look at the next decade of Bitcoin, it's going to exist. Someone's going to solve these problems, but no one had the balls to like take a look. And so I was like, yeah, well, I'm going to take a look. Like, let's figure it out.
Who do you think, who most aligns with like the farmer in that analogy? Would it be merchants, miners?
Miners, yeah. Miners. Yeah. So this is a knowledge bomb that I love to drop when I talk about this stuff. So you own Bitcoin, right? You own
never
sats.
Admit that. I'll never admit that.
Sure. But someone in the United States who buys Bitcoin with the dollar, they're taking a long Bitcoin position against the dollar. But for the sake of my story here, they're short the dollar against Bitcoin, right? That's the trade they're putting on. Now, a miner, I want you to finish this bottle of rosé and sit with yourself after this and think, why would a miner mine instead of buy? Because that's such a simple trade, to be short the dollar against Bitcoin. Now, a miner is not that. A miner is short fiat against Bitcoin, but on a much longer time frame. On a shorter time frame, when they plug in their machine, they're actually short difficulty against Bitcoin.
Oh,
right?
Whoa, yeah.
And then they also have like an option call that has an expiry in a way of their hardware, because hardware ends up worthless over a given period of time, and hardware is always improving. So you have this weird hardware exposure with an expiry attached to it. You're naturally short difficulty against Bitcoin, which, by the way, is not a good trade, right? Difficulty is always going up. And then over a longer time frame, you actually have this long bias to the asset against your native fiat currency. And so that trade, so that is a trade that a miner is putting on, as opposed to the trade I am, which is I'm short the dollar against Bitcoin. So that is not a position that you can just hodl. It's a very complicated trade, and it's very much not simple. So that, I think, needs to be dissected, like actually understanding the risk that these miners are taking on, how to de-risk them, what derivative products can that's our corn farmer, right? They have natural biases to the market and really complex trades they're putting on where they're not speculators. They don't know what a call and a put is. And so how can we build financial products around them and their risk and their exposure to de-risk them a bit? And it'll make this market healthy. And we can actually maybe more accurately price the asset, because these are the only market participants that are pure, authentic, organic, and have economics that are based on Bitcoin. Everyone else doesn't.
Freaks, I don't know if you can see the passion through the audio, but Jack, that was an impassioned rant right there. And this is actually an incredible conversation to have today, because I just talked to Slushpool yesterday. We were talking about this, like, futures markets for chips. And
yeah,
when ASIC modification comes a thing, like, and they were talking about, like, Slushpool has this, like, grand vision, not grand vision, but grand dream that one day, like, the mining coalition can come together and, like, buy a foundry and, like, split up risk that way. And,
right.
Like, maybe the first step is, like, a derivatives markets that helps them de-risk their portfolios right now. They're basically long bias, long only bias, and they're waiting for hedge products, right?
Yeah. So when you look at, okay, so back to like my Zap roots, well, let's be very practical, very simple. And what's the lowest hanging fruit and how we can best help? Like, not get too complicated, right? So the lowest hanging fruit is actually this difficulty component. Being long Bitcoin on a long enough bias is actually fairly trivial to hedge, especially with the CME product. But what's not trivial to hedge is if Bitcoin were to stay at a flat price, let's say it trades at $10,000 for the next decade. If you take in account the halvings, right, and then you also take in account the difficulty, for better or worse, will always go up. And even if that doesn't mean like interest in the asset, if it simply means just innovation in hardware, like we can see on the hash rate chart, GPU or CPU mining turned to GPU mining, turned to ASIC mining, and there's just general innovation in hardware around the world. And so if I am a miner and USD BTC price stays flat, I'm still have this crazy exposure to difficulty, mm-hmm. and it's a huge problem. And you can look at the hash rate and see, like, a lot of them, miners are essentially, like, trading on margin, basically. Like, you can watch the hash rate and see, like, when we broke through 6,000, like, everyone got margin called, right? More or less. And that goes to show that there's no hedging tools there. And, like, how can we, my first order of business is, how can we hedge difficulty? How can I have a market maker or build a market that can take on and be permanently, like, these miners want to de-risk by being long a difficulty future. And who can professionally be short difficulty? And who can absorb of that risk? Because at the end of the day, these derivatives of a risk transfer, so when the corn farmer transfers risk to the market maker now has the risk, right? Well, someone has to dissolve of the risk. It's good that the corn farmer doesn't have to, but the market maker has to, or else this market will die. So not only can we allow this risk transfer, but how do we dissolve of it? Like, where are the hedges? Mm-hmm. And how, we need to do, like, a lot of quantitative analysis on the correlation between the spot price and difficulty, where they meet, where they don't, how we can de-risk and hedge that. But if we can accomplish this, the market itself and the mining industry is going to be extremely healthy. I remember saying to you, like, I think Bitcoin derivatives is going to decentralize mining. And you mm-hmm. were like, oh, yeah, fuck you. and this is what I was hinting at, though, is like a healthy derivatives market will take the risk off of those who are taking it head on, like getting absolutely wiped by it. And if so, then like there's much more incentive to bring hash rate onto the network if I can manage my risk portfolio that way. Right now, mining is more or less a gamble, and geographically distributed, we can see like the eastern side of the world is taking this gamble on. But if we can de-risk it and make it more of a business, a hardware business, which it really is, I think it'll be healthy even for just Bitcoin in general. So,
no, I agree. I agree. I think I agreed with you. I think I might have disagreed with you on something else. No, but it's crazy. Thinking about all the variables that would go into like trying to pin price to hash rate, right? Because you have miners buying equipment at different time, turning them on, like finding energy contracts at different points of time. Like it's not easy to buy miners and find the commensurate amount of energy that those miners can be plugged into. So there's so many variables to take into consideration. And then on top of that, like we're thinking like corn farmers brings me back to working for the managed futures fund. Like I had to watch weather reports, like, and it's like corn farmers, like there was a huge, we'll talk about wheat in particular, like Kansas wheat. There's like a huge rain, storm in like the plains and it kills like a crop, like it affects price that way. So like a market condition or excuse me, a market, what would that be called? An event. Like a rainstorm in Bitcoin, it could be something like Bitmain fucking up their wafers and something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like weather is priced into corn.
Mm-hmm.
It is through yeah. derivatives, through yes. futures, right? A lot of our industry, like hardware runs by Bitmain, difficulty, energy costs in China, like they're not priced in. They can't be. These miners wear that risk right in between their eyeballs. It's fucking brutal. It's good when it's good, and boy is it bad, and you can get wiped out. So yeah, I mean, basically what I've been trying to do is first and foremost, the technology in the exchange land is poor, like as far as performance goes. Like if you look at capital market performance and then like execution at BitMEX, or like can't get your order through. So first was, we call ourselves the CBE Group, the Chicago Bitcoin Exchange Group.
Love it.
And first order of business was building some exchange infrastructure where however we get this thing to market, we also want to have really efficient and fast order execution, bus engine, matching engine, all of that stuff. It would be almost irresponsible for me to deliver a crazy good product to the market and not deliver the tech that can execute on it, mm-hmm. Right? I don't want a miner trying to get their hedge off and like in the exchange being like, sorry, bro, not today.
Not today.
Yeah, and then the second order of business is actually building this market. So there is no one that's naturally short difficulty. Actually, that's a horrible trade. So how do we de-risk that? Like what type of energy hedges, what type of hardware hedges, how can I de-risk and dissolve myself of being short difficulty, and where are those market makers? So I've talked to everyone between the SIBO, Susquehanna, Citadel, like a lot of these large players that they want to get into Bitcoin, but there isn't organic and natural flow, which I can explain if you want. But to them, this is extremely interesting because you have an economic player who doesn't have a bias and they have a hedge to get off. They're willing to pay a premium. And this is like every other market to them. And this is the type of maturity that I think we'll see in the Bitcoin market, is more complex products that capture more complex and larger flow. And then you'll start to see Citadel have a Bitcoin desk. You'll see Susquehanna trading. Right now, they can't. And so having these conversations for me, we're starting to execute some of these notes OTC, try and build this market up from the ground, get a structured note together with a miner, get a structured note together with the market maker, build this up, and then hopefully I would love to see it listed on the Cboe or something one day. But one step at a time.
One step at a time. We got big dreams. One step at a time.
Too big.
What's it like educating these incumbent financial institutions?
Yeah, well, there's an education process on both sides. I look at myself as like a professional arbitrager of education, really.
Like,
I really am not the brightest dude at all, but I just am like arbing education everywhere. So for the institutions that I spoke on, they have lack of interest to... First of all, everyone's interested in Bitcoin as a phenomenon, right? Like just socially and what it's done to the world and what it's introduced, just as like a vehicle to educate people on what money is and what you think money is. Like it's in the eye of the beholder, more or less. So everyone's interested from that lens. But from a business lens, there's no flow for these people to trade against, really. The only flow that exists is the BitMEX perpetual swap retail flow. And that's why you see so much volume there, actually, is because there's dumb money trading. No shark. We don't want a shark pool, is what they call it. You don't want a shark swimming with another shark. The shark wants to swim with the little fish. And Citadel, these guys can't find the little fish. Like, when you go on GDAX, the only other market maker in flow on there is Donnie Wilson at DRW, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, to them, they're like, oh, my God, this is fascinating. This miner flow is incredible, but what the fuck is difficulty? it was actually really funny. So some of the products that I'm designing is like, we're actually going to settle the derivative in blocks, not time. And there's a variety of reasons to do that.
Yeah, I was talking to Juthika Chow from LedgerX about this, expiry dates based on block.
Yeah, hype. Yeah, there's a lot of reasons to do that. I won't go into it right now, or we could, I guess. But my point was going to be, there's a dude who I work with. He basically... created and ran options digital trading at Bank of America. Like, he was at NYSE, ISC, like crazy capital markets background. And I'm teaching him this stuff, and he's relaying it to the Citadels, and we're on a call, and he's explaining, you know, this is this contract. It's actually going to settle in blocks, and he's rambling a little bit, and then he goes, hold on a second, everyone, let's pause. First, let's define time. Right? And it's these capital market suits that are just mind fucked by this shit. They're like, wait a second, you're not settling, and there's no like 4 Eastern like settlement.
I have said it on this podcast before, Bitcoin block height is going to replace the Gregorian calendar at some point in our lifetime.
I'm bullish on that thought. But it's crazy. He was like, well, hold on a second, everyone on the call, let's define time. And also this difficulty thing, and when they explain it, they realize really the genius of Satoshi is baked in. Difficulty is one of the things, right?
I think difficulty is the most important aspect of it.
Yeah, proof of work and difficulty. And when they actually wrap their head around it, not only are they interested in de-risking the miners, but they're also interested in now owning the thing. They're like, by golly, this thing, not only do you see the inflation rate slowly decrease and work its way to zero and the supply slowly flatten out at 21 million on these graphs, but you can see that it's a computer program. You can visually see that it just steps and ladders its way down as it's clearly an executable program. And they're like, oh my God, like there is a computer out there dictating the monetary policy of an asset that is defiably scarce. Like, get the fuck out of town. And then they're like, my goodness, I would love to have miners pay premium and make a market there. Now that is real flow. That's a real trade. I don't want to trade on GDAX with any other shark. And I also, like, this is what they tell me. They're like, I don't fucking hodl, bro. Like, we don't sustain bear markets. Like, we're market makers. Like, we make billions of dollars a year. We are not, like, libertarian, like, hop skipping in a circle. I trade against flow. I'm like, okay, calm down, I get it. but through these conversations, they get it, they understand Bitcoin. And so it's been cool. It's been really a pleasure to sit in these rooms and talk with these people.
it's crazy it's taken this long to like come around to it, right? Because it is that like that revolution, like that revolutionary aha moment that you just described happened for us obviously years ago. It's nice to see people coming around, and maybe it's being reflected in price.
Yeah, well, I think like there's a clear correlation between the market participants and the general maturity of the market itself. Like, we have spot products, and then we've got a spot future. Not too interesting. And especially considering who's trading these products and where the flow is going. Like, if you look at, I ask miners, you know, how are you guys de-risking? Like, are you selling puts? Like, what's the word? And they're like, dude, I don't even know what a put is. Like, all of our flow exists OTC. And so to that's a really immature market. You can see by us hitting 20K and 3K within like 18 months, that's a reflection of that. It's not an efficient market. And so, yeah, there's a correlation between who wants to participate in that fucking carnival, right? And but as it matures and people come to understand and some of these more mature products in the exchange space are going to be developed, then, yeah, the herd will come. There's no doubt about it. There's money to be made, you know?
Yeah, and it's... Sorry if the sirens in the background are being picked up on the mics right now, Freaks. That's New York City for you. No, but it seems like something is happening in this bear market in particular, where like more prominent people are having more aha moments. Like, oh, this is here to stay. I've been saying it's because Bitcoin officially passed the decade mile marker, and that's like just huge psychologically being able to just say, yeah, it's been around for a fucking decade. Like, try to tell me it's not going to be around like much longer. And then on top of that, like the brand awareness, like Andrew Torba and I just had a conversation earlier this morning, and he was saying he can go to his grandmother and be like, Bitcoin. She'd be like, yeah, I know what that is. I've heard about it. You go up to her and be like, Tron. She's like, the movie? Like,
yeah.
So the brand awareness is there. Feels like the institutions are coming. Like, this is the most bullish I've ever been about on Bitcoin in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for my friends that know me, I've been grossly bullish like ever since I was 18. So,
well, you have one sitting next to you that you convinced to come work with you.
He can speak to that, like almost obnoxiously bullish. Like sometimes they have to like hit me in the head of like, yo, dude, calm down. But yeah, dude, I agree with you. Everything you said makes a lot of sense. The truth is, like, don't really know, but yeah. A decade of existing, just the general like profiles of people that are in Bitcoin. Like, you did what? You made what percent? Like, I mean, these things matter to these people. So yeah.
Well, then you have like the Brad Shermans of the world coming out and trying to ban it, and literally becoming the best shill that Bitcoin has had in a while by describing how the U.S. dollar is weaponized against the rest of the world.
I was just gonna say that. Like, wait, what? You want to ban Bitcoin because it's such a threat to the dollar? Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then he was like, "Yeah, the dollar like lets us make sure that everybody has to buy their oil with the dollar and convert to it. Like, it's a strength." It's like,
yeah.
It's just like you're just enticing people that do not use the U.S. dollar to be like, wait a second, why does it work this way?
And I don't know Brad, so I'm not going to feel bad. But, like, it is almost as if he put on a costume. It was like he couldn't have looked better the part.
Oh, my gosh. Like, landing strip.
Over into the mic, and it just looks like a goalpost of his bald head. And he's like, rrr, like, Bitcoin is threatening. And, like, I love it. I love it. It's perfect.
Brad, if you're listening, you can come talk on the pod. Let's hash it out.
Yeah.
Pun intended. Sorry about the sirens there, Freaks. I don't know if it picked it up.
We'll see.
I was up here with Parker Lewis a few weeks ago.
Nice.
And it was really windy, but the mics didn't pick that up. I'm hoping they don't pick up these sirens. But if they do, it's a nice little background ambiance. What else is going on? What's going on with Lightning? I'm not going to lie. I have used it more in the last week than I did the first 16 months of its existence. Or was it? What is it, like 18 months old?
Depends. Are you going off the birth of the white paper? Or LND mainnet was, I think, March of last year. So yeah, you can say that.
Okay. Yeah, so...
A little over 12.
Yeah. A little over 12 months. I've been using it the most this last week over this 12 months. And that's because of your app. Like,
yeah. Well, because of your website. Like, your website's cool. We should show that.
Yeah, tftc.io.
Yeah, TFTC's killing it.
Thank you.
Your brand is dope. Well deserved. I've been a fan forever. Your website's cool. Congrats.
Well, and it's powered by Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And BTC Pay Server. Shout out Nicholas Dorier, TFTC.io. Go check it out, freaks.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it feels like doing this, I view myself as somebody who's, like, not too technically competent. That's why I have Matt Odell to come on and, like, handhold me through some of the technical aspects of some of this stuff for Rabbit Hole Recap. And then, but this was, like, the first time I feel really comfortable, like, using the Lightning Network. I have a node running. I hooked it up to Zap and creating channels, checking invoices, creating invoices, sending Lightning. You can see it. As somebody who I consider myself a dumb user, like, it feels like it's becoming easier. So from an infrastructure standpoint and a UX standpoint, like, where do you think Lightning is compared to your expectations when we met in October?
Yeah. Well, Lightning's always exceeded my expectations, dude. Really crazy. The amount of people involved and the amount of resources and passion behind this project is, I mean, no one could have predicted this, right? No way. So yeah, far exceeded my expectations. I think everyone in Lightning will tell you that there's much more work to do than there has been work done, but that's okay, and that'll probably be that way for a really long time. But I mean, come on, like, how far we are as a community, a lot of that goes to the protocol devs, a lot of that goes to just users and feedback and the community itself for supporting us, like the support Zap has. I'm humbled by it all the time. I can't believe it. I was at the conference just now, and someone walked up to me with Zap on their phone. I was like, get out of town. You guys actually use it. Wow, that's cool. So, yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
No, and it's that's what I was alluding to earlier was the FinCEN report that dropped last week.
Sure.
So you were talking about getting a money transmitter license. Does every Lightning node operator need to do that?
No. Okay. Or what are we quoting Ryan Charles right now?
I think so.
Yeah. No, dude. No. Yeah, I think actually the FinCEN stuff was more or less bullish. Yeah, the fact that Lightning is something they're aware of. I mean, generally speaking, regulatory, at least in the United States, I can speak to, has been a little tough, right? Like, Bakkt can't launch, Aris Access had a tough time, and that's largely because of the CFTC regulations and this idea of being a custodian and what that means in Bitcoin and how you actually successfully become a custodian. We just now watched Binance get hacked, right? So I think them understanding Lightning, giving it the time of day, and then the fact that Lightning introduces this almost like self-clearing aspect, where in a beautiful world enabled by Lightning, there is no custodian. You actually transfer that custodial risk onto the end user, and there's no one holding anyone else's keys. And this self-clearing idea in, like, traditional markets, like, self-clearing, like, get out of town. You serious? Like, clearinghouses have made a ton of money brokering, like, this idea of clearing. And just, like, settlement in general, you look at, like, inter-exchange linkage and what other assets have done in other markets to improve the efficiency in settlement, and that we get this on a decentralized basis for essentially free when you talk about fees and the speed at which we can physically settle. So I think a lot of the FinCEN stuff is good. A lot of the stuff the CFTC is worried about, Lightning is going to become a priority for a lot of these things. Like, what if Bakkt was using Lightning to physically settle their derivatives, like, with their traders, like, through Wumbo channels or something? I'm speaking ambitiously, but those type of things, I think regulators are aware of Lightning. They like Lightning because it lessens the responsibility of a custodian. So I think that FinCEN report was really cool that they actually wrote Lightning on paper and gave it the time of day.
Well, the report that I'm talked about like dApps in particular as well. But yeah, it was all about, like, money. It was like defining money transfers.
Yeah, and there was a lot of DEX stuff in there.
Yeah.
DEX. Can't get it all right. It's okay, FinCEN.
Do you think DEXs will become a thing?
I don't, man. Well, actually, can you define DEX for me? Because it's become a bit of a smart contract type buzzword to me.
Yeah, I cannot.
Yeah, I can't either. I think the general idea of having order execution live in a peer-to-peer network will not be successful. Like, order execution is, like, the main value prop of an exchange is, one, aggregating the book and providing this liquidity source, and then two, efficient order execution. So if you are telling me through, like, a P2P, like, way, I'm going to be executing orders through, like, some atomic swap or something, like, I don't see it. I really don't. But maybe, like, people's version of a DEX, or why they find it important, is, like, removing the custodian. maybe that's possible in years to come with like Lightning enabled wallets and institutional Lightning services that allow people to have a Lightning wallet where they're self-custodying, and then they in one click of a button they send, deposit, and execute a trade all in like one full swoop, right? Like, I think that if that's people's version of a DEX, I think that I'm very bullish on that. But
yeah, and the whole, especially a DEX that's around POW, like the miners being able to see the transactions that are looking to trade, seems
yeah,
like it'd be front
I don't think like removing the DEX, all DEX's theories, at least like DEX maximalist, if there's such a thing, like their theory is that like they're removing exchanges from what they're actually good at, which is aggregating book and order execution, you know? So I don't think that's necessary. I think exchanges serve a really cool function. The custody aspect of the asset, there's a lot of work to do there. I think Lightning will be really beneficial, Liquid maybe, right? Things like this. But I think exchanges will live on forever and serve the purpose that they're really meant to be good at, in my opinion. Yeah. I could be wrong, though.
Their
like,
purpose could be,
I'm an idiot.
Their purpose could be temporary, right? Like ideally, we've been talking about like the closed-loop system eventually that we'd like Bitcoin to get to. Like maybe exchanges are only temporary until the collective consciousness is okay with using Bitcoin as money.
Right? Yeah, so you're like if there's a Bitcoin standard type
yes,
of thing
yeah.
and there is nothing to trade into?
I mean, there will be other things to trade into, but currencies probably.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like in a hyper Bitcoinization world, does an exchange really matter? Well, like there will still be a derivatives market that's really liquid, I would assume, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the things we were talking about earlier. But yeah, you're right.
But people will be getting paid in Bitcoin, right? They won't necessarily be going to buy it to acquire it.
Yeah.
It'd be more a work for Bitcoin type world at that point.
That'd be sick.
That would be dope. That would be dope. And it's like, where do I want to go down? It's like building this website. Like, you can see the dream happen. Like, if I was able to buy merch and buy stamps and do everything on Bitcoin, like, I probably could easily do it. Like, BTC Pay Server makes it so easy. Like, BTC Pay Server, the only reason I use Shopify is because BTC Pay Server hasn't figured out, like, shipping, like, how to take shipping information, like, in an invoice. So I had to use Shopify just for that functionality.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's close to being like closed loop if you want to be like, and you're talking, you deal with weed merchants. Like, do you think they're more, driven to the closed loop Bitcoin? Cause they have to be.
Yeah. Well, my family has, officially become part of the weed industry.
Boss,
we have a weed mining farm.
Boss,
weed miners, the Bitmain of weed in Boulder.
Boss.
Yeah, it's cool. But, yeah, you're right. So, we don't have a bank account. That's shitty. Like, it's legal in the state level, illegal on the federal level. So how do you take payments? Like, we have a security budget for, like, people to make sure that no one walks in with a gun and, like, takes the six figures in cash that's just constantly there, right? Like, sheesh. So, yeah, like, the dream of walking into a dispensary, buying Bitcoin over Lightning, getting it delivered to you instantly, then being able to spend it instantly, and then being able to then on the back end get some cash back out. Like, Lightning should, in theory, collapse the vertical stack of the Bitcoin economy and really tighten these economic loops, in theory. So, yeah, I think, like, the weed industry is mad buzz about Bitcoin. It's a way to physically settle an asset that they can use for payments. That's really big deal.
Do you want to, because we chat about this a little bit before we hit record, do you want to jump into it, or are we going to keep it at bay?
Let's just say, like, I have some really cool announcements coming, and if you're bright enough, you may be able to connect the dots. Not that if you don't connect the dots, you're not dumb. But yeah, I don't know. We're working on some cool stuff. Be on the lookout. I'll tweet about it. I'm sure I'll write a Medium article. Starts with yo or something. Yeah, soon come.
What, been any good shows lately?
Well, I was talking about it with my buddy sitting next to me on the Uber ride here, where I don't watch, what is it, Game of Thrones? I don't watch it.
What is it, Game of Thrones?
Yeah, my girlfriend gets, like, visibly upset when the show comes on and I like open my laptop and like start coding or something. He's just like shaking, like, what is wrong with you? So yeah, I watched like American Vandal. Now we're gonna get into like embarrassing territory for me.
American Vandal. But yeah.
I think that's
dude is
cool.
Drawing dicks on people's cars.
Yeah, the turd burglar.
The turd burglar.
Yeah.
I love
caught him.
What's his YouTube channel? Jimmy something. Jimmy Tatro?
Who are we talking about?
The actor in American Vandal.
Oh, he has a YouTube channel?
Yeah, well, that's where, like, how he started, his YouTube channel. It was pretty hilarious back in the day.
Damn, I did not know that. Yeah, I've been on, like, a lot of flights. So American Vandal, I was just pounding out, like, who is the turd burglar? Who is shitting on these kids while they're in high school? And I was like, wow. When we found the turd burglar, mind was blown. I recommend it. But, yeah, now we're getting in, like, embarrassing, like, Jack is a quirky kid, like, dangerous territory.
Well, this is a podcast for freaks, so.
Yeah, that's okay.
This is okay. We can bring it back to lightning.
No, we could go wherever, man. I'm 1.5 rosé glasses deep.
I'm, like, sweating right now. I feel bad if I can see.
Yeah, I'm probably sweating.
You can take your shirt off. Get some sun. I got some suntan lotion downstairs. You need to go get it. It's a beautiful day. It's the most beautiful day of the year, I think,
yeah,
so far.
Yeah, this is cool. Cool time to be in New York.
I love recording outside. It's the second recording outside, and it's pleasant.
Nice.
It's you don't get to do this too often.
No.
No. What do you got planned? You're yeah. speaking tomorrow at Magical Crypto Conference. Are you excited for that?
I am. I'm going to be talking about the derivative stuff. There's a lightning panel. I've lived most of my life on the internet, so it's really cool to like meet people in real life. That's cool.
That's the best part. That's what I was like talking about with Andrew today too. It was like, especially with after the conversation with him, it helped me realize that there's like different, I don't want to say communities, but like different sects of people on separate missions, but they're very similar. So like the free speech mission that he's on with Gab, and like Bitcoin is on that similar mission with like free value transfer and free access to money.
Yeah.
And these mission driven, I like to call them mission driven communities. It's like awesome to be a part of them, because like you just said, like you meet up with these people that you've only ever conversed with in DMs on Twitter, or not even in DMs, like only you can play like games, like you only communicate via liking tweets and shit like that. And then you meet in person, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
It's really easy to one, hit it off, and then two, like sort of start talking about how we're going to change the world. There's like a revolutionary feeling when you meet these people.
There's like, well, for people that come to conferences like this, there's almost an intimately like identifiable, relatable thing that we all have in common, right? Like Bitcoin still to this day is a super quirky thing. There's a lot involved to becoming like more or less a professional Bitcoiner, where you're at like a cartoon conference, like talking to people, right? Like there's a lot that goes into that, but I relate to everyone about that. Like, yeah, you thought Bitcoin was cool enough when everyone didn't. Like you definitely got like looked at weird at Thanksgiving, like, you know, all the things. Like
last Thanksgiving was the worst one to date.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And so like even just that simple, like that's a really cool bond that everyone here has. So it's just cool to like just see people, give them a hug. Like, yeah, we're in this together. Like, I didn't know there's actually a human being on the other side of those screens that I'm talking to all day online. Like,
they exist. They're not a bot. They're not a Russian bot. It's no, it's crazy. And then, what was I going to say? I'm forgetful, a couple glasses of rosé deep.
Yeah, that's okay.
Craig Wright. Like, what are we,
I'm down.
What do you think about, fake Toshi finally getting taken down by Jameson Lopp?
I don't know. Is there much color to like?
Is this the end of the saga? Do you think?
Fuck if I know. If we allow it to be,
right? That's my biggest point. Like, stop talking about it. Like,
yeah. I don't know, dude. Who cares, really?
I don't. I'm sorry for bringing him up.
No, you're good. This is a message to like the general public. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, there's just no way of all the things that we have to be working on as Bitcoiners, like. Just who cares? I don't know. I hope it is. Like, the guy's clearly a douchebag and a loser, and he, like, is harmful to people, and, like, that's not cool. So I hope it's the last of it, but I don't know. What's that, like, the market can last more irrational than you can be solvent or something, right? Like,
Keynes, the market, the market can remain irrational far longer than you can remain solvent.
Right, yeah. So yes. Same thing with, like, logic. Like, people can give an idiot more light and time of the day than,
dude, he's just playing an idiot to destroy his credibility so people don't actually believe his Satoshi, man.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? There's a lot of that. Like, even, like, the Bcash, like, Peter, how do you pronounce the last name? Ruzin or whatever?
Ruzin?
Yeah, I don't know.
Ryzen?
People are really upset that he was on a podcast with my good friend Peter McCormack. Mm-hmm. Like, who cares, dude? I don't know.
Right?
Like, sweet, year long Bcash. It must be fun.
That's actually, like, an interesting, like, peek into, like, we're talking about, like, decade and institutions coming, like, a hyper-Bitcoinization potentially. Like, if it does happen, it's going to be funny, like, this is such a small community right now. Like, imagine it's not, yeah, it's going to be, it's not even going to be a community. It's going to be everybody's using Bitcoin, and a lot of the quote unquote, like, thought leaders in the space are just going to, like, sort of dissolve into the background because there's going to be so many people talking about this stuff.
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. I don't know. I'm excited. Just, like, there's just so much to do, so little time to care about Craig Wright. That's what I'll say.
Well, speaking about doing, one thing I'm excited about on Lightning is, this is what I wanted to get into earlier, is the Loop and mm-hmm. Bolt. Is that the other project working on this? Like, the atomic swaps for liquidity on opposite?
Spark swap.
Yeah. Yes, that's what it is. This is something that, like, fascinates me, but I, like, don't understand completely.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the concept is if you have a lack of liquidity on one end of your channel, you can easily atomic swap in and out on the main chain to provide liquidity to that side of the channel.
Yeah, so much word salad, you can almost fill yourself for dinner.
Right?
But, yeah, so the Loop stuff is dubbed submarine swap. Mm. That's by Lightning Labs. Every time they come up, I compliment them. I love them. Zap builds on top of their stuff. They're great. And so the idea there is essentially in a trustless way, swapping yourself between on-chain and off-chain. And it's really cool and fascinating. And what that can result in is rebalancing channels, even some more ambitious use cases that I think we'll see. Zap may provide some in the future. But are you pulling up your Zap wallet?
I am. Well, I'm pulling up my channels because, like, I can see... I love the visualization of the channel. So, like, if you're looking at the Zap wallet, you can see how much you can send, which is in orange, and how much you can receive, which is in blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I can easily manage, like, looking at my channel, just, like, clicking this and being like, do you want to loop some over?
Yeah, so I have this, like, vision of, like, the channel management, whatever, going in an editable state where you could just, like, drag it. Like, that's how much liquidity I want. Like, that'd
be
sick.
That would be awesome.
That'd be cool.
Whoa. Talk about UX.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And it's entirely possible. Like, the unfortunate thing is there's so much to do, and in reality, with Zap, there's just, like, a few of us, like, on Slack all day, like, trying to get it done. So, yeah, in theory, like, we get that done. Hopefully, it's on the priority list somewhere.
What do you guys need?
People. Like,
what kind of people? What kind of devs in particular?
excuse me. Our desktop app, which is by far our most popular app, is...
You said it has over 10,000 users, right?
Dude, we crossed 900,000 asset downloads, which is a GitHub metric, more or less combination of active users and new users. But still, like, that's a really big number. Like, what the
Getting
fuck?
Close to a mil, baby.
Yeah, I know. I'll have to come back and have some rosé for that. But yeah,
we'll pop some bottles for that. We'll get some champagne for that
Yeah,
one.
Some Henny.
Ooh, we could do a Henny. I got some Henny downstairs. I got some Henny downstairs.
Oh, okay. I see you.
We'll have to get some Malort if we're talking Chicago.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyways, yeah, that is an Electron app that's written in JavaScript. iOS is written in Swift. Obviously, LND is written in Golang, which is what we use. Android may or may not be coming. I know a lot of people. Yeah, there's a TFTC.
A little hint.
Yeah, there you go.
A little scoop. Is that how you do it? Scoop. Scoop.
I have a best friend at home whose nickname is Scoop.
Really?
Yeah.
How did he or she acquire that nickname?
So his original nickname is Fat Tony.
Boss.
So his nickname is, or his real name's Tony, and, like, you can envision where the fat came from. Well, he's a great dude. I'm not even making fun of him. He's gonna laugh at this. And then Scoop, Fat Man Scoop, is a DJ.
Boss.
In Chicago.
Fat Man
and
Scoop.
He looks like him.
Where's he play? Is he playing at the Evil Olive? Is he playing at the Mid? Where's he playing?
I don't know. Probably his basement. It was more it was more that they look alike. I don't know what Fat Man, the real Fat Man Scoop is on. But whenever I see, like, what are the block writers, right? They're the ones that, like, all caps, like, Scoop.
Yeah, yeah.
I, like, always screenshot and send it to my friends. Hilarious.
Yeah, I think this might have been the first live on-air Scoop. So credit TFTC.
Yeah, I have a folder on my laptop that says Sir When Android ? And it's like a screenshot of all the people that ask me. And it's a crazy, the whole Zap Android thing is a crazy cool story that I plan to write and release a blog post about soon. So wait on it. I got you.
Can we get a forward to that story right now?
When is this coming out?
In a few weeks, I think.
In a few weeks.
I got a lot of backup. In 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay, so I'll give just like a tiny preview because I don't know if I can time this well enough. But I was in China. It was like 3 a.m. It's like my sleep schedule was just bonkers. It didn't exist anywhere. Even if I was in the United States, it wouldn't have made sense. And I got a DM from a random person that I'd never met, like anonymous. They're just like, I've been working on Zap Android for the last 3 months. As if it was like Satoshi. And it's just like, a huge shout out to this community. It really is. Like, when I say it's community driven, that's not marketing. Like, that's real life. And so, yeah, this thing kind of fell out of the clouds based on demand and based on people, like, really wanting it to exist. And so it's almost there. And it's a really, really cool story of who this person is and why they did it and stuff. And I'm write a blog post soon. Hopefully before this comes out. We'll see, though.
Boss, I can't wait to read it.
Yeah.
No, that reminds me of something I wanted to touch on either. Earlier when you were talking about the exchanges that you're educating or the institutions that you're educating, mm-hmm. They're like, holy crap. The demand for these products is, I think, what makes Bitcoin inevitable, right? You have people going to these market makers, like, can you make these markets for us? And they're going to be like, are we going to be able to make money off of it? Yes. So yeah we're going to make it. And then like Android users, like, I need to have this product, and just being like, all right, I'm going to build it. Like,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No.
I was going to say the inevitability of Bitcoin, like, is driven by like demand because it provides, like, it obviously provides useful, it provides utility for people, obviously.
Yep. Yeah. The like hidden commodity behind Bitcoin that is fascinating is people. There's like human beings behind it. And like, smoke a blunt and think about that. Like, there's a ton of people that are behind this thing, and everything that you see as Bitcoin was created out of just like donation of time, resources, and a gravitational pull towards what this thing represents, you know?
Shout out DG, who wrote the Bitcoin's gravitational pull a couple weeks ago. It's like, it does have this gravitational pull.
It's crazy, man.
And
it really is.
We're experiencing it here in this goddamn city this week. Like, I'm so lucky. We were talking about this earlier. Like, I'm not a huge conference guy. Conferences stress me out.
Me too.
The aesthetic stresses me out. The sweatiness, the having to wear a lanyard, it's just not my thing. I don't like it at all. I always put my lanyard in my back pocket.
Fair.
But there's a gravitational pull to the city right now. There's talent, people coming through just to talk about this fake internet money that Brad Stevens thinks we should ban. So it's like...
Yeah. Brad Stevens?
The
Boston
Brad
Celtics
Sherman.
Head,
Brad Sherman.
Head coach?
I can't speak for Brad Stevens.
Brad Stevens just got smoked.
Yeah,
4-1 to the Bucks.
Yeah.
Hot seat.
Should have enjoyed your time at Butler. He should have stayed. Brad Sherman. I meant to say Brad Sherman. Brad Stevens may own Bitcoin. We don't know. There's rumors out there that the Golden State Warriors getting paid on their table in
BTC. Wow. Steph has a Zap wallet.
This is a test. This is a TFTC test. To see if there's any professional athletes listen to this this podcast. If you are, listen if you're stacking sets. You know, don't be shy.
Yeah.
At Marty Bent, at Jack Mollers. Shit. I don't know what else. We set this up yesterday, so I don't even have like a bunch of questions to, like, talk about. Let's just riff.
Whatever, dude. I'm down. I mean, so your podcast, like, you're one of the people in the space that you're a friend, you know? We did this last time. You met my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got hammered in a Chicago bar with you. So, yeah, like, I'm down for whatever.
Let's talk about Kingston Mines. That's
okay.
The bar.
I might have to share the mic with... So, this guy sitting next to me...
Name him. Stop just saying this
guy. Sorry. Fuck. Fuck. His name's Dylan. He's a childhood best friend of mine. Helps me out with, like, life. And then also Zap. But, like, life, too.
Dylan, hand the mic to Dylan. How did he get you involved?
Hey, what's up, everyone?
How did he get you involved in Zap?
He basically hit me up one day and was just like, does your job suck? Do you hate the corporate 9-to-5? Like, come hang out with me. And reluctantly, no, I jumped in as soon as the offer came my way. So.
Well, you're telling me you had some experience on the Silk Road.
I did have some experience on the Silk Road. Mom, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. But yeah, my first experience with Bitcoin was...
You just checked it out. You didn't use it.
just visual purposes. Yeah. But yeah, in college, a couple friends of mine were just experimenting with a bunch of stuff. We were just reading all over the internet and stumbled upon Bitcoin in the Silk Road. And that was my first introduction to it. So,
and like many people who discovered the Silk Road, you forgot about Bitcoin, then came back and Jack annoyed you enough to come work for him.
He actually was like annoying me some, like maybe a month after. And I was like, nah, man, I know what this is used for. And turns out the value prop was right in front of my face. I was just a bit too like young and immature to realize it.
Right. That's the crazy thing. Like thinking back to when I was at DePaul, like learning about Bitcoin in Chicago. When I think about Bitcoin, like when I was learning about it, I think about Chicago, like hard, because that's where I spent. I was in college, so I had plenty of time, and I spent countless nights staying up, like reading Bitcoin talk. Like I have visions of me being in my Lakeview apartment, like reading about Bitcoin and like being that high ass Bitcoin friend at 3 a.m. Like, you guys need to start paying attention to this. Like after the bars, like going to Los Tres, coming home with a burrito and be like, let's talk Bitcoin. All right. We're going to wind down the night. We're going to put on some Foster the People, talk about Bitcoin.
Yeah. Like I always, whenever I talk about my origins into Bitcoin, I have to shout out my dad, dude. Because people are like, man, you got into Bitcoin at 18 and never looked back? Like, dude, you're smart. I'm like, no, dude, I'm not. Like, I have a cool-ass dad. My dad is the fucking
dad,
man.
When you were like, yo, should I drop out of college? He's like, yeah, do it. You don't like it, get out of there.
Yeah, I, like, was at St. John's, got in a fight with my roommates, went to the airport at 4 a.m., slept there with a bunch of homeless people, first flight back to Chicago, never went and got my stuff, and then my dad was like, yo, you're good. Check this Bitcoin shit out. Like, what an amazing guy. Amazing, amazing. So, yeah, I have, like, a crazy cheat code. But when I was, like, bothering Dylan about it, it wasn't because I was any forward thinkers. I'm just, like, my dad's son.
My dad told me this is chill. I trust my dad. Let's get into it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, his, like, background with markets and stuff, he saw it exactly for what it is. So he's just a really bright dude.
Yeah, it seems like a G willing to go from futures markets to Bitcoin to the weed industry.
Yeah, a marijuana miner and a Bitcoin hodler.
Somebody just seems to not give a fuck about what people think of them, because these are Bitcoin and marijuana in particular, things that come with a big stigma.
Yeah, and things with great R&R too. Like at the end of the day, he's a trader.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we make new highs and marijuana gets legalized at the federal level. It's a good trade.
Very good trade. Very good trade. It's becoming like, you can't fucking walk down the street. I'm sure you guys smelled it coming off the L today. Like, you can't walk down the street in New York without people smoking a spliff or a pen. Or
weed's tight.
Weed's pretty tight, dude. Weed's tight. Love weed. No, but it is becoming like more normalized to the point where it's like, all right, it's not cool anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I smoked for the first time in my life when my parents actually acquired the business. So I had no exposure to weed beforehand. I didn't have too aggressive of an opinion on it. Just like, I never did it. Mm. So I can't speak as an expert, although it would be tight if I could.
I'll step in here. I didn't get it. I didn't find pot until I was like 20. It was after my last concussion. I didn't start smoking pot. I was an athlete, was like totally against pot until my last concussion. I've had 6 pretty severe concussions. And the last one prompted me to take a biology of the brain class at DePaul my senior year, or my freshman year, my
That's
sophomore
cool.
year.
That's
me.
A cool story.
Yeah, beginning of my sophomore year. So I took that to sort of understand. And while I was taking that class, the teacher for some reason was like really like into weed and cannabinoids in particular. What I learned is like cannabinoids, especially with dull cells, my brain's got a lot of dull cells. It helps them perform better than they would have if the cannabinoids were not there.
Yeah.
It's something that like we were born, like again, it's like, we were born into the system. We were just told, like, this is bad for you. And you're like, all right, it's bad for us. Like, let's not question it at all. Which is, like, agree. And it's literally a plant that It's called weed for a reason because it grows like everywhere in the fucking world.
Yeah, and I love just being a student of the game. Like now there's this CBD.
Mm-hmm.
And like
CBD is the blockchain, not Bitcoin,
Marty's
of the world.
Marty's reaching his arm it's across the table.
It's the blockchain,
bro,
not Bitcoin,
listen,
of the weed world.
Okay. But yeah, dude, like, I mean, people are buying CBD from us in Boulder and like healing rashes and stuff, like crazy cool things. Like, I love being a student of the game. Like, no shit. Like, why is this such a bad thing to people? Like, what's going, like, what's the word? It seems helpful.
And it's a much preferred night smoking a joint, watching a movie, then getting blackout drunk and waking up hungover.
Yeah.
So it's funny that we, I mean, this has been said many times on many podcasts and many conversations, but there's no stigma of getting blackout drunk. But if you smoke a joint, you're the devil.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a good drinker anyway. I'm like 5'8", 155, like a couple rosé glasses on your pod, and I'm falling on my face.
Well, you're somebody, how's your head feeling?
Yeah, dude, I was going to make a joke about my head, hopefully time it well. So, you know what's hilarious is, so first of all, my head's feeling okay. It was,
this is good.
A man named Mark outside the conference today, he walked up to me and he goes, "Hi, I want to say I love Zap, I love what you do, and I love your head, and I hope it is feeling okay." I was like, oh my God, man, like, can I have a hug? Like, what an amazing thing to say to me.
Freaks, let's stop and pause here. I don't want to get too heavy, dude, but we were close to losing you, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah, we're going to get heavy, but that's okay. No, that's okay. Yeah.
That's how, I mean, just as a Bitcoiner using your app and all that shit, like, I can't imagine, like, what the world would have lost if that had turned out a different way. Like, we're lucky to have you here. That's what I'm trying to say.
I don't know if, like, you're trying to get me a cry on your pod, but
I'm
crying, dude.
Like, the rosé gets me a little emotional.
I love it. Thank you, man. It really means a lot. Yeah.
No, it's something I've thought about many times, actually. Like, fuck, if we lost that kid, like, we may be worse off than we are now.
That's awesome, dude. Thank you. Yeah. I remember, from that fall, I don't remember a lot, but what I do remember, I was in, like, my intensive care room, having obviously a little tough time, and I remember someone handed me my phone and told me to open Twitter, and it was just an array of tweets, and like people were mailing me gifts and stuff from the Bitcoin community, and I immediately cried. Immediately. It was just like the most warmth family feeling. I was like, this is much bigger to me than like an investment, you know, or a hobby. Like, these people care about me, and like, that is a scarce commodity within itself. Like, that is so cool. And I've never met a lot of them in person, and there's a language that we speak fluently that I can't even define, you know. Mm-hmm. But like, at that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, like, what a cool thing. I was the luckiest kid in the world in that moment. It was really, so yeah, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate everyone that has supported me. It's really, I mean, I don't know if you can rewind time and I relive this again, if I can relive it as luckily and had be so humbled. Like, seriously.
No, well, thank you for pulling through. seriously.
Thanks to doctors. I remember, so for those that don't know, I had multiple brain bleeds, so it wasn't looking kosher. Actually, Dylan, who you just met, my girlfriend called him, and he rushed to the hospital to my rescue, helped me out. But checked my brain on a scan, wasn't looking good, and it was going to be third time's a charm. Like, if this wasn't looking good again, we're going to have to dig in there and do surgery. And it was on my birthday. And I remember being rolled in there like, man, if you guys can do me one favor, like, for my birthday, like, how's about, I think his name was like John or something, like, how's about it, John, one time.
One time, John.
Yeah,
one time for
me, please.
The third
one, they were like, yo, your brain's actually okay.
Boss.
So, yeah.
I'm pumped to hear that.
Thanks to the docs and to the cement for not hitting me too hard, close enough, but like not too hard. So yeah.
Yeah. No, again, pumped that we're able to have this conversation right now. And then like going back to like what you touched on, like with the community and stuff, like this is what I was talking about with Andrew too. Like, and going back to what we touched on earlier, like the mission driven stuff, like it feels like a lot of people that are into Bitcoin have been thirsting for like purpose. Right. And it's providing that for us. And you see a brother in arms like go down like that. Obviously, you feel, but like you, because you know, like I know how you feel about this stuff, because I feel the same way, I think. And it's like you want them more people as somebody who feels this way, you want as many people to feel that way too. And like to even lose one of them in a battle like Bitcoin would have been devastating.
Yeah. There's going to be a really cool Netflix documentary about Bitcoin one day. And like, I think psychologists should really study like the humans behind the asset. Seriously. Like, what is the draw here? What's the buy-in that goes deeper than the financial gain? Like, why are people here? And like this relationship that we all have is a fascinating
one. Purpose, man. People want purpose. And I feel like we grew up in a world where like people weren't afforded like things that gave them purpose. Like, especially like the clout chasing social media world that we live in now, yeah, where it's all look at me, look at me, look at me, look what I'm doing for myself. It's not a lot of people looking out like, look what I'm building for everybody.
Yeah. And I think like generally human beings want to die being part of something bigger than themselves. I think that's really important. And with Bitcoin, you find that and have something to really latch onto and believe in that's just not only bigger than yourself, but it's absolutely enormous. And people enjoy that type of relationship with it. That, yeah, so even Satoshi himself, like, wouldn't be as valuable at all if, like, he or she, excuse me, or they, like, came back today. Like, Bitcoin will forever outgrow and be bigger than any one thing. And I think like that's a really important relationship people have with it. And like people want to die with that type of relationship on the world. Like they believe Bitcoin is this big thing that will help the world. And dying, being a part of something way bigger than yourself, is fulfilling. And like human beings generally, I think, is like, it's a really intimate relationship people have with it.
Right. No, I completely agree. And that's why I fucking write the Bend. That's why we do this podcast.
Yeah.
Are we crazy? Like,
not probably. I hope so. I do. I hope so, because I would be mad at myself if I was normal.
Right.
That's a deep thing. We don't even get into that, but yeah. Nah. I hope I'm crazy.
I did too.
Not too crazy.
I like working from home. I like being able to write about what I want to write about. That's why, like, I think I had the opportunity to go write for a couple of other publications in the space, but I was like, you know what, I just want to be able to do it for myself and
nice.
Send it out in MailChimp and a shitty link on Twitter, and that's all the distribution I need. But like being able, like, that's the thing too, like if you have okay things to bring to the table, people will listen to them as well.
Absolutely. Like, I remember,
and I'm not saying I have that, but
you're a stud. I remember my dad has the Bent printed out and framed. It was
what?
Yeah, no,
no.
I swear to God. Yeah. It was the day that I did a Lightning Litecoin transaction with Charlie, and this was like, let me give some context here before I get absolutely blasted. It was when Litecoin got SegWit first, right? Mm-hmm. And this whole world of SegWit 2x and like, is Lightning legit? And Charlie Lee and I did a Lightning transaction using Zap, like in summer of 2017, maybe. When did you start the Bent?
Summer 2017.
Okay, yeah. So there was an article where you put the Litecoin price in a graphic, and then you said, look what happened when this kid did a Lightning transaction with Charlie. Wait until Jack Mallers does it on Bitcoin. And my dad read it and was like, fuck yeah, that's my son. And like, I remember getting texted like a link of this newsletter and being like, I like this guy, man. Yeah.
Your dad was reading the Bent before you were?
Yeah. Dude, my dad does everything before me.
Will's all over the place, man.
Yeah.
He's, damn, that's, I'm honored to, because that was early on in the game.
Yeah.
That was very early on.
Yeah.
Shit. It's crazy, though. It's crazy what can you, like, and I don't want to get on my high horse here or blow smoke up my ass too hard, but.
You should, man.
It has been worth waking up and writing the Bent every day for the last almost 2 years. We're a month away from 2 years.
Good for you.
June 8th, 2019 will be the 2 year anniversary.
It's organic and authentic, and that's the beautiful part about it. I love it.
It's a daily rant. I just get up and yell at everybody once a day.
I love it. I remember when we were hanging out in Chicago drinking, I'm like looking at my phone. I'm like, yo, dude, it's 12:30. Like, the Bent comes out. Like, when do you write it? Like, it's soon. You're like, yeah, man, I don't know. I set an alarm. Like, I wake up, pump it out, and hit submit. Like, yeah, that's awesome. That's
I should probably cool. be doing more proofreading. That's
or less.
Definitely more. Definitely
okay.
more.
Never mind.
Definitely more.
Word. My dad just texted me. Actually, let's see what he said. Got to be something to do with the price.
Tell him I said what's up. We are we over 7K?
No, he said crowded in here today with a picture of the dispensary.
Boss.
Hell yeah.
Hovering around 7K. That's great. The price this week's been, I mean, I don't like to talk price a lot, but it has been like at first like, oh shit, volatility's back.
I guess volatility's back, or like bidders are back. I mean, look at the size of these green candles. It's bonkers. Right? Yeah.
And consecutively.
Well, you know, I'll take this into a point where I hope is interesting to the readers. So I like doing quant analysis on like halvings and like the spot price and relative to the halving. And so there's not enough historical data for me to draw any conclusions on how people price the halving in. But the 2016 one was relatively not priced in at all. And I found that really interesting. But I think that the market, the participants in the market and who's placing buy orders on exchanges right now are much more sophisticated than those that were doing so in 2016. Where I have this assumption that the halving is going to get priced in much more aggressively this time around. And I could be like really wrong, but in theory it should be. Like Bitcoin gets defiably more scarce on a specific day, and it not only gets more, but twice as much. Like, what the fuck? Like, how are you guys not buying? So anyways, I think like this price action, I hope that it's people pricing in the halving. I really do. I hope this market gets more efficient. And I think it's a reflection of the sophistication of the participants that are in it compared to 4 years ago. But when I see the price today and the movements that are happening, I really hope that it is
a pre-price in instead of a post-price in.
I would just like to see that. I mean, regardless, I think Bitcoin is going to go up a lot. And when it does, doesn't matter to me. But I would hope that the reason behind this price action right now is halving related, just because that would signal a maturing of not only the market itself, but the participants that are in it. So I would hope so. That's like what I'm telling people at the conference when they ask, but I could be really wrong.
I wasn't checking a text. I was checking the days till the next halving based off the current difficulty, 378 days away. So a little bit over a year. Year and 13 days. Yeah, that's a topic of conversation for like a lot of the Trace Mayer's Safedeens of the world. Is the halving priced in?
Yeah, in this like stock to flow thing, which Safedeen introduced, and now Plan B is made popular.
Yeah, 100 trillion Plan B.
Who I love. I love Plan B if he's listening. But yeah, like this is the stuff I talk about with the Susquehannas and the Citadels, right? Is like, why is Bitcoin valuable? Well, I have no fucking idea, but if I had to guess, it's because like, markets and as a society in general, like we value scarcity, and like there's only few monetary commodities or commodities that can be considered monetary, and Bitcoin is not only one of those, but it gets scarce at a predictable rate and at a predictable time, and it's going to be extremely more scarce than any other asset ever, and like introduce the halving and stuff, and then so in theory like this stuff should start to be priced in and front run. So I don't know. I hope so.
No, and it goes back to what we were touching on earlier about like brand awareness, like Andrew Torba going to his grandmother and being like Bitcoin. She's like, I know that. That's like part of it. Like part of price discovery is knowledge, right? Like you need a collective understanding to which is priced into the asset, right? And
yeah,
as more people come to know Bitcoin, I guess. And that's like the other thing. So like Barstool, that's been my indicator more recently, is Barstool Radio has been mentioning Bitcoin Marty more and more recently.
So that's been like cool. That's a cool accomplishment. I've got the like one bite app on my phone of Prez eating pizza.
There's a lot of revisionist history going on in the Barstool offices about the advice that Bitcoin Marty was giving. Bitcoin Marty was telling people not to buy shit coins and a dollar cost average in if they were going to buy it all. I was not telling people to go all in.
Yeah.
I just want to get the record straight here. But going back to the Barstool integrator, they're talking about it. And this is, again, like, so in that first run-up where they were aware in 2017, 2018, where I was in the office, like, stop buying shit coins. Please do not buy thousands of dollars of Bitcoin, especially if you can't afford it. This time around, they already sort of have, like, a basic understanding. And, like, again, like, the tide rises, the ships all rise with the tide. And, like, the tide is creating a higher and higher high watermark every sort of adoption bubble cycle.
Yeah, wave. Yeah, I have two things to say in response to that. One, economics 101, like just supply demand. If you think about it, like this, you're wearing, for the listeners, you're wearing this green tee. If I were to offer you $50,000 for that t-shirt.
Off my back right now.
Yeah, sure. But surely you'd go find more, right? And then eventually the market would find a sufficient price for that green tea. And you just print more and more and more of them. Now, supply and demand in Bitcoin is crazy because someone today bought a Bitcoin for 7K and you can't go print more of it. And when you try to, it gets more and more difficult. And so that idea to anyone that understands scarcity, commodities, and just like an asset and supply demand metrics in general, like, wow, like, dude, that's nuts. Secondly, did you know that I was a fresh college dropout. I didn't know what to do. I was like, damn, what would I like to spend my time on? I actually applied to Barstool as an engineer, and I wrote in my letter.
Erica, Dave, yeah. What the fuck were you two thinking?
I wrote in my letter. I was like, I can code, and like your website's shitty, so I think I can make it better. But also, there's this Bitcoin thing, and I think you guys should use it as like you're really quirky and you're really a front mover on all fronts generally, like not afraid to take the first step. And I think you guys should try like this microtransaction, micropayment thing.
Dude, I was pitching this to them when I was in their
office.
Yeah,
and it was an email. They're like, if you want to work at Barstool, you should just email this person. And so it was this long email like, hi, I'm Jack. I design things. I code things. And like this Bitcoin thing I think would be really, I mean, considering Barstool's target customer and like who you guys relate to, I think it couldn't hurt. Like the R&R's got to be favorable.
I've said Bitcoin is a currency for the common man by the common man. And yeah, Barstool is a blog for the common man by the common man.
Yeah, so I actually submitted that email to them. I never heard back, which is probably a good thing.
Yes. It's a good thing for your sake. I love Barstool.
I do too.
I'm a stoolie. I enjoyed working for them. On the tech side, they've got Andrew Barba, who's crushing it. They need more engineers. That's all I'll say.
Nice.
Or at least when I was there. I can't speak. I haven't worked there in a year.
Sure.
But when I was working there, like I was making Twitter bots, and I was like, I should not be making these Twitter bots.
Yeah.
But Barstool is, that's another thing about brand awareness. Like, and the beauty of Barstool is like people go to it and go to the site despite its clunkiness and stuff like that because they want to get the content because it's that good. Like Bitcoin, people are using Bitcoin despite its slowness. I can't believe I'm analogizing Bitcoin to Barstool right now, but we're going to fucking do it. It's slow, arduous, but it's worth it. Right?
Yeah.
It's worth it. And the content of Barstool is worth it. And I hope my Barstool saga isn't ended. I'd like to be back in that office when not working for them, but like talking to them about Bitcoin.
You know, it's funny. My roommate, whose nickname is Thumper. So Thumper.
See big, he's Thumper from like the drinking game or
no Thumper from what is the movie with like
Hook?
The Bambi, right?
Oh, Bambi. Yeah,
yeah. Isn't there a Thumper in there?
I think so. Or okay. Is it Hook?
I don't know.
Is it one of the lost children of
at
Neverland?
This point it's just like numb to me. It's just Thumper. But yeah, so Thumper watches me watch these pizza reviews every day. Like
I watch them
religiously
day.
Right. And he asked me, he was like, dude, let's say Bitcoin, like, gets to $1 million and, like, you're this, like, person that, like, called it and, like, all of you little nerds on Twitter are, like, popular. Like, would you rather go on Ellen or do a pizza review? And I was
pizza
like,
review.
Oh, dude, I was embarrassed by the question. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, how well do you live with me? You have to know me well enough. Yeah, pizza review. Absolutely. I love Barstool.
The pizza review in particular is a form of content that amazes me because the spontaneity with which Dave brings to it, I laugh at it every day.
Yeah.
If it's a short one, if it's a long one, if he has a guest, if he doesn't,
yeah.
If he's in New York, if he's in a different city, like Dave has that it factor where he can just turn it on and fucking be funny.
Yeah, I went for a jog this morning. And I've got the One Bite app, and it lets you know when you're around physically, like a place that Dave liked. So I'm constantly getting dings like, yo, you're by Joe's Pizza or something. Like, Dave gave it a 9.1. I'm like, fuck yeah, that's cool.
It's right down the street.
Yeah.
Doxing myself here.
Oh, really?
Joe's Pizza Manhattan in, in Union Square.
In Nebraska.
Yeah. but that indicator, like, it's becoming. Like I've said, it slowly but surely, Bitcoin's like creeping into the psyche of the masses, and like where it's becoming a common topic on Barstool. It's like, oh, Bitcoin price like jumped today. Like,
well, also in the reverse, right? Like the people that don't like Bitcoin inherently are also dying. Like they're old. You know what I mean? Like we'll soon.
There's some Zoomer haters too. Don't worry.
Yeah, sure, but we'll soon have a world where people that are native to the internet, native to all payments they've sent, haven't been through checks or credit cards, but have been through like Venmo, right? Mm-hmm. And like, we'll have a world where these people are the ones having kids, and these people are the ones that are CEOs of businesses and of Citadel, right? And like that world will exist soon. And Zap, yeah, there you go. So yeah, no, I think it's in the reverse as well. Not only is it brand awareness and it's survived, but in the reverse, like the people that really try and punish it, aren't going to be around forever.
Yeah. They eventually get their comeuppance, you know?
Yeah.
It's, Bitcoin's a cruel bitch. She does not care what you think about her. She'll produce blocks roughly every 10 minutes, depending on what the difficulty is and how much hash rate
Hopefully
is on the network.
We can hedge that. But don't underestimate like the turnover of like humanity, right? Like there's a constant churn, like 10 minute blocks, like what, 80 year lives or something, right? I don't know the average.
Or generations, like 33 years or something like that.
Yeah. So I wonder what form of money like people being born today are going to be pulled into.
Doxing myself a little bit further here, but I'm about to be 28. Like it feels like life's like fucking flown by so fast.
You're like my age.
Yeah. We're like the same age.
Nice.
What do you think? I'm an old man?
No. No.
But it's like, it's crazy to think how much our lives have changed. It's like, I remember fucking, I've said this before, like pulling AOL out of the back of a Millennium Backstreet Boys album and downloading it for my family in like 1996 or something like that. Or no, that was like 98, 99. But to think how far we've come for them, where like my mom is using an iPhone now and is like introducing apps to me. It's like the stuff is inevitable. And to think that it's not a natural progression of like to think that we're going to have an internet and not have a native digital currency just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yep.
As somebody who's, I'm not even internet native. I remember the world without the internet.
Yeah. Well, I'm short the dollar against Bitcoin with you. So I can't counter that. I agree with everything you just said.
All right. So let's wrap it up here.
Sure.
Anything, any last topics or tidbits you want to give the freaks out there?
I don't think so, man. I live on the internet and I use my full name as my whatever user tag or whatever. So I'm not hard to find. Don't be shy.
At Jack Mahlers.
Yep.
Thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you for pulling through. nah, keep it up, both of you. Like, fucking Zap's incredible. It's
thanks, dude.
Making Bitcoin and Lightning usable for an idiot like myself. So keep it up. I love what you're doing. Peace and love, freaks.